Earlier this month, in September of 2025, a new statue was unveiled at Göbekli Tepe. Now, this one's shaped like a human, or anthropomorphic as they call it, and it was located at the bottom of a wall, incorporated as part of the wall, as a matter of fact. And this has caused a lot of different discussion and speculation to happen. First of all, they kind of held off on releasing this statue until they had this big to-do going on. They had Japanese royalty there. They had discussions of renovations and repairs. It was a big, big ceremony. And it kind of makes sense they would do that because, well, you've got guys like Jimmy Corsetti who's basically saying, why aren't you guys excavating more at Göbekli Tepe? So now they've got this nice, cool statue. They've probably been sandbagging it for a little bit, waiting to announce this just so. And speaking of Jimmy, well, he's got an opinion about this statue. He thinks that it may well be a statue of Noah. He believes that Göbekli Tepe is the ark, or could well be the ark spoken of in the Bible that Noah sacrificed animals at. At any rate, he's quite adamant about the statue being placed in the bottom of that wall, not as a sacrifice or not so much deliberately as just like they were reusing stone that was in the area. Now, the archaeologists and anthropologists involved, they tend to be of a different opinion. They tend to think that this is what they call a votive sacrifice, where it or a construction ritual, you could say, where they place a human or some sort of effigy of a human in the foundation of a building. Now, both of these are viable alternatives. So, of course, you know, the internet being what it is, nobody wants to talk about it. They just want to argue. So let's talk about this for a little bit. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dunking. Now, for those of you who live under a rock, you probably haven't heard of this yet, but the rest of you have almost certainly heard about the Minister of Turkey's Tourism and Culture Department coming out and saying they found this new statue. And it really has some huge implications, whether you're into alternate history or mainstream archaeology. I mean, on the one hand, if this is so old that it was treated like rubble when they built this wall that it's in, well, that would say that site's pretty freaking old, wouldn't it? On the other hand, if they made a votive offering of it, if it is part of an architectural ritual, this is the beginning of a ritual that permeates the globe and carried on until relatively recent times. We see it across the ancient world, sacrifices of humans or effigies of humans as part of the origin of a construction project. From the Celts to the Greeks to the Sumerians to the Mayans to the ancient Anatolians, there's a long-standing tradition of including some sort of representation of a human being as part of the building itself. The reasons are generally lost to time, but we do have a few mentioned, and this helps us figure out all kinds of stuff, like which direction the idea traveled and which cultures were involved in these types of practices. You know, way back before the hills were dusty, we had a discipline that would dig into things like this, and I used to talk to these guys all the time. A lot of these guys still do dig into things like this. The problem is that there's a lot of bias and a lot of pressure from within to conform to certain ideas, which is why I haven't been able to talk to very many of these archaeologists lately, because a certain one didn't like being called out online to millions of people. So he went around and started threatening other archaeologists and other scientists and saying, hey, don't work with that Dan Richards guy. If you do, I'm going to blacklist you and tell everybody else you're a piece of crap. So I'm very happy to have an archaeologist on this video here, a mainstream archaeologist, not one of the weirdos that are in the Comet Research Group like Mark. Sorry, Mark had to. Thank you, Madam Archaeologist. Link to her channels down below. Let's see what she has to say on this topic.
Hi, everyone. Madam Archaeologist here. And in light of the new discovery announced at Göbekli Tepe of a human statue mounted onto a wall between enclosures B and D, I wanted to spend a few minutes going over the ritual use of human remains and anthropomorphic statues in construction. I was graciously invited by Dan to share my insights on this topic here, so here we go. First, we need to define the term ritual, and this term is actually highly debated within archaeology and the social sciences. So whether you are going to interpret certain practices as ritualistic behavior is going to, in part, depend on how you define the term. In archaeological contexts, I'm particularly interested in ritual as a practice, what a ritual does as opposed to what a ritual means. A ritual is a repeated action that carries cultural, social, spiritual, or religious significance. When we're dealing with prehistory, there is no way to recreate the exact thoughts and beliefs of these past societies. We have no texts to guide us. But when we take ritual as it is defined here, when we place emphasis on the practice part, Then it becomes possible to identify potentially ritualistic behavior in the archaeological record, because actions can leave behind material traces. A common misconception is that ritual automatically implies religion. It can absolutely be tied to religion, and one could argue that ritual is what reinforces religious beliefs. But while religion includes rituals, rituals need not always be religious. A ritual just needs to be a repeated action that goes beyond the practical, that carries a deeper meaning, a deeper significance that could be cultural, social, religious, or spiritual.
You know, she's 100% correct here, and this is something that a lot of people seem to have trouble with, so I'll interrupt her to chime in here. Take a baseball player, for example. It could be a Muslim, a Christian, an atheist, Jewish, whatever, and they still might have the same little, I don't wash my socks before each game, I always do this on my bat before each at bat. They've got traditions, they've got rituals that they get in their head. It has nothing to do with their religious belief. And so I think that's probably the best one. If you know anybody who gambles, you've probably seen this kind of behavior too.
Now, Göbekli Tepe is not an isolated site. It is part of both the wider Taş Tepeler phenomenon, that is, a series of Neolithic sites in Upper Mesopotamia around the city of Şanlıurfa, and it is also part of the even wider pre-pottery Neolithic period of the Near East.
I'll interrupt her once more. Like she said here, Göbekli Tepe is part of two other cultures, basically, or two other umbrellas that they have, the Taş Templar and the Neolithic Pottery Group B. Now, both of these have connections between different sites, which allows us to use certain ideas as kind of diagnostic tools to see, do these hold up across other sites, or is this kind of a one-off? The more of a one-off something is, the less likely the ideas attached to that are to be accurate. If you see something everywhere, probably a little bit better chance that the ideas that attached to that are more accurate because, well, take the Clovis points, for example. It doesn't take a lot of speculation to realize that these were a trade good that went across the country, right? Same kind of thing. All right, back to Madame Archaeologist again. Sorry, I won't interrupt you a third time.
And the new discovery at Göbekli Tepe is not the first time, within the pre-pottery Neolithic Near Eastern context, that we see a statue placed within a wall or other architectural element. At Nivale Chore, for example, archaeologists have found statues, or pieces of statues, buried in benches, embedded within walls, and placed inside niches. These so-called birdman statues and the famous snakehead are a couple examples. Also, it is worth noting that we see carvings of human figures within walls at Sibirch and Karahan Tepe. And although they are not human statues embedded within walls, they still tie into the larger theme of anthropomorphic figures linked to walls. And if we go beyond walls, plastered anthropomorphic statues have also been found in pits dug beneath floors at the site of Ain Ghazal in Jordan. Another repeated practice we see at pre-pottery Neolithic Near Eastern sites, more so in the Levant, is the deliberate burial of plastered human skulls. Plastered skulls are not exactly statues, but they are a related line of evidence because the statues discussed here are anthropomorphic, and so both the statues and plastered skulls relate to representations of humans. At various sites, plastered skulls have been uncovered beneath floors, while at Tel Ramad, they have been found in niches. At Sefer Tepe in Turkey, a skull was also found deposited within a niche, and although it seems to have been unplastered, it is worth mentioning because it ties into this larger pre-pottery Neolithic theme of burying or depositing human remains and anthropomorphic figures within architectural elements. These are just a few examples, but they show that what we have here are phenomena that repeat at various sites. We don't find statues within architecture, or representations of human figures on walls, at just one site. Nor do we find deliberately buried or deposited plastered skulls at a single site either. We see these practices being repeated at different pre-pottery Neolithic sites, and in multiple instances at some sites. With regard to statues being placed within walls, we are left with interpreting this as either people thought it was a good idea to do this, or there was a deeper meaning behind the practice. Since this practice is seen at more than one site and multiple times at Nivale Chore, we can consider this a repeated action. And since the practice is part of the wider Taş Tepeler phenomenon, it carried cultural and social significance too. Considering this, it's fair to say that we may very well be dealing with ritualistic behavior. What the exact meaning or meanings were is difficult to interpret for sure. Were these statues votive offerings? The ritualistic deposition of objects that no longer serve their previous purpose? Could the objects have acquired different meanings over time as rituals changed? It's hard to say when we are dealing with prehistoric material, but again, I'm not interested in the exact meaning here, since this is pretty much impossible to gauge from prehistoric remains. I'm interested in ritual as practice, as repeated actions that are culturally, socially, spiritually, or religiously significant, and finding anthropomorphic statues and human remains within walls, and within or beneath other architectural elements at various pre-Pardo Neolithic sites, fits this bill.
And a big thanks to Madam Archaeologist for weighing in on that without vitriol or anger or condescension. It's nice to be able to talk to somebody about the ancient past that knows some stuff that you don't and has a different lens without fighting. Thank you very much. Check out her channel down below. One of the things that's interesting, she spoke at length there about this idea of people, you know, burying effigies of humans as part of a construction ritual. This idea goes way on into the modern times, up into the 19th century even. We see this in England. We see this in the New World and the Old World. You see it in Sardinia. You see it. I'll read you a paper that was written for Southern Illinois University. We'll read you a little chunk from that. In 1813, the ice broke of the dam on the River Elbe, and the engineers had great trouble in repairing it. An old man addressed the dike inspector, saying, "You will never repair the dike unless you bury in it an innocent little child." And Grimm adduced an even more modern instance, which dates from 1843, when the new bridge in Male was built. Grimm tells us the people talked of a child which should be buried in its foundations. Now, the idea of a person or an effigy of a person being used in the foundation of a construction project to like make it work or to like sacrifice to the gods of the earth or whatever seems to have really permeated throughout the ages. I mean, all the way up into where Merlin is said to have fought two dragons that were down in the foundations of where he was going to build Vortigern was trying to build his castle. The same kind of concept. It's like in the foundations there was like this battle, and there's like this, you needed to do stuff to appease these things that lived there. This idea really permeates all across the ancient world, and it's a very interesting one, and it does give us a touchstone. So you can look at it just like the megalithic stone nubs or the clamps or the navel-holding statues. This jumps the pond. You're on all over the world. You see this sort of thing. It makes it awfully interesting. But we have a lot of arguments about this on the old Twitters because, well, Jimmy's Corsetti is of the opinion that that statue was just basically recycled and put there. It wasn't part so much of a sacrificial rite or anything like that. It was just shoved there by somebody that came there much, much later, which this is a possibility. Now, he thinks that the area may well have been the altar that the Bible speaks of in Genesis 8:20. Now Noah builded an altar unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast, and of every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So Jim thinks this may well be the place where Noah made those sacrifices, and he thinks that that statue was probably there for a long time, and then somebody else came and incorporated it into a wall. He thinks it's very old, and that the fact that it was just shoved into a wall is proof that it's very old. And archaeologists are saying, no, this is part of a culture, of an idea, of a tradition of burying things. Matter of fact, it's the oldest one we have, which is pretty cool. And once again, I'm just going to kind of sit here on the fence and say these two ideas aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, the Noah thing is, you know, that's neither here nor there to me, because I'm not really a biblical literalist. So, you might get all kinds of different things from different stories, different minor details. But the idea that that statue was an old statue and that it was incorporated into the wall, let's put it this way. If it was a effigy that was built into that wall, like the archaeologists are saying, it would make sense that it was one that was valuable to the community, one that had been there for a while, one that had been in use, which it shows its signs of being in use. The fact that it has like the peg feet, right? That means it was like a used statue, was buried in the ground. So it looks to me like this thing was used for a while and then buried as part of this tradition. Then the reason I think it was buried as part of that tradition is because that tradition is so fucking ubiquitous that it makes sense to me that right at the beginning of human construction that we see this. Of course, as Graham Hancock says, things keep getting older, so I expect we'll find older construction, and eventually we'll probably find some that don't have anything like this. Now, I want to take this time really quick to thank this video's sponsor, TNT Supply in Swainsboro, Georgia. I know it's a little bit odd for a sponsor, but TNT Supply is a huge, huge supporter of the channel. I'll leave the link to their website down below. If you live in the region, go get your construction materials there. If you don't live in the region, maybe order some from there. Maybe just give them a call and tell them thank you very much for supporting Dan. Anyway, let's get back to the video. Now, the fact that the statue is holding its navel is worth mentioning as well. We see that in most of the Taz Templar statues that are anthropomorphic, but it's very interesting because Graham Langdon has done work with this at length, and it is very, very intriguing stuff when you see this over and over again. It even has the same peg feet we see on a lot of the other navel-holding statues around the world. So it really is another interesting little touchstone where it does seem like Göbekli Tepe does seem to have a lot of the seeds of the beginning of culture in a lot of different ways. It's not just the beginning of agriculture there and the beginning of megalithic architecture. We have all kinds of little things there that you just see pop up over and over and over again. It seems like Göbekli Tepe is ground zero for a lot of it. Now, like Madame Archaeologist said, we'll never know for sure what happened way back then. We'll never know for sure exactly what people were thinking when they put this together, why it happened the way that it did, and all that jazz. But one thing is for certain, the more people we have looking at these things, the more different ideas, the more lenses we look at things through, the more likely we are to find the truth. So I really want to thank Madam Archaeologist for weighing in on this and for helping out with this video. I want to thank Jimmy Corsetti, even though I just talked to him on the phone for a little bit. I want to thank him for weighing in on and giving me his two bits on this. And I want to thank all of you for watching. I even want to thank the archaeologist that dug the damn thing up, even if you did sandbag the release of it to make sure there was a Japanese princess nearby. And one more thing before I go, this December 5th through 7th, I'd like to invite you to come to Scottsdale, Arizona for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference. I'll be there, Jimmy will be there, a bunch of other people will be there. It's going to be warm when the rest of the country's cold. I'll shake your hand, I promise. Links to support the channel and to get your tickets to Scottsdale are all down below. Thanks very much for watching. Hope to see you next time.